Okay, this is talking with Tatsuo Takakura, is that the correct place to say? On 17 August 1981 at the IRSI meeting in Washington, D.C. Well, could you first tell me what was your educational background? In what field was it? And then how you first came in contact with radio astronomy?
Okay, I was graduated from Department of Physics in Osaka University.
Osaka?
Yes. And after the graduation, it was just after the Second War.
Yes.
And we have no job.
Right.
So I stayed in the graduate course.
In physics?
Yes. And the Professor Oda.
Oda, yes.
He is now working on the X-ray astronomy.
Today?
Yes,
yes.
Today.
But he did publish, you did publish papers with him.
With him, yes.
Yes, yes. Back then, yes, okay.
And he, someday he asked me, it seems to us that the radio astronomy seems to be very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I was interested in the electronics. And Dr. Oda has no background for the electronics,
yes,
at that moment. And we joined.
I see.
To start some experiment for the radio astronomy.
And this was at Osaka University.
Osaka University, yes.
Right. So what was your first step? What did you have to do?
Well, using the old searchlight mounting.
Yes. Japanese military?
Yes, yes.
Right.
And we made horn.
A horn?
Horn antenna.
Yes.
And tried to measure the solar radio emission at 3 gigahertz.
At 3 gigahertz,
yes.
Uh-huh.
Using a Japanese radar.
I see. So it was all wartime equipment that you assembled together?
Assembled,
right.
Yes.
And what year is this now?
Pardon?
What year?
Let's see.
The first publication was in 1951.
I think it's
1950
or so.
50, okay. So it was a year before your first publication.
That's right.
And did you get a PhD degree?
No, I got PhD right in, 1961 or so.
In 61, I see. So,
Well, the system of education was not the same at the present.
I see, I see. You certainly had done enough work through this time, yeah. So, the Japanese military had equipment at this high frequency.
That's right.
Relatively high frequency. Mm-hmm. And were you reading all of the literature by the workers in Australia and England, mm-hmm, and so forth? And why was it that you decided that microwave observations of the sun would be a good thing to do?
Well, there are very few observations in that microwave range at that moment.
Yes.
Only the Canada.
Right, Covington.
Covington. I think that's only one
station
that
Reber had a little bit at that time, but it was very little, right? Mm-hmm. And of course you had the equipment that was available.
That's right.
So the first article I find, together with Oda, by you, mm-hmm, is covering 6 months of observations at 3300 megahertz, mm-hmm, and you are trying to relate the radio intensity with the sunspot number,
mm-hmm,
and looking at the fluctuations and so forth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, why did you choose the sunspot number as the thing to... it seems like there was quite a bit of analysis that was always done with sunspot numbers over the years, right?
Yeah. I don't remember.
Were there any optical astronomers that you were talking to at that time?
Yes. Let's see. But we are a rather isolated group from the astronomy, because the Osaka University has no department of astronomy. And we used to have meeting for the researchers working on the ionosphere, and also the some astronomers,
mm-hmm.
Every 2 months or so.
Now, when you say we, do you mean just at Osaka University or all of Japan?
All of Japan.
Every 2 months? I see.
We try to combine the information.
Right. This is what was published in the reports of ionospheric research in Japan?
That's the reason why we published
it. And how many other groups were there in Japan that were doing solar radio astronomy at that very early time?
At that moment, only the Tokyo Astronomical Observatory is going to start 200 MHz observation.
Right.
Because it was the frequency of international standard frequency to monitor the sun.
Right. So there was only two groups then.
That's right.
At this early time.
And a bit later, Toyokawa Observatory started observation at microwave frequencies.
A bit later, you say?
Yeah.
Yes. About what time?
Well.
Okay, I can check that.
Yeah, yeah.
And the chief people at these two observatories were who? Can you just remind me?
Hatanaka was the chief of
at Tokyo.
Tokyo, yes.
Right.
And Tanaka
at
Toyokawa.
What is the name
Toyokawa.
Again?
Toyokawa.
Toyokawa, yeah.
Nagoya University.
Right. I have interviewed him, but I forget these names.
Oh, I see.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Now, another thing that you were looking at in the early days quite a bit was the directivity of the radio radiation from sunspots and trying to investigate that. Why was that of interest?
Because the directivity would give some information about the emission mechanism.
Oh, yes.
Or the structure of the magnetic field or something.
Right. And so your whole thrust was to try to find out what the mechanism of emission was. And did you measure polarization at that time?
No.
It looks like it was not until...
Yes. We tried to using phase delay plate.
A quarter wave plate?
Oh, that's right.
Right. Yes. And did that yield any results? I don't...
No, I didn't publish.
The first mention I see of polarization measurements is...
Type 1?
Yeah. Well, let's see. Actual measurements, I guess I don't see any through 1960.
That's it.
You talk about... the theory of polarized solar bursts, but there were actually no measurements.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Nothing new.
Now, when you were doing these observations, it was you primarily that was building the equipment and testing it and so forth?
Yeah.
And you said that there were no optical astronomers at your university.
Yes.
But did you talk to optical astronomers elsewhere at all, or did you correspond with them?
Yes.
And who would they be?
Astronomers in the Tokyo Astronomical Observatory.
And who there?
Well, maybe let's see, Hatanaka, was the chief for the radio astronomy group, but he was the optical astronomer.
But he was an optical astronomer, yeah. Yes, I see. You also did observations from 1950 to 52 at a great variety of wavelengths, from 200 to 3300 megahertz. And what do you think was the primary result that came out of these?
Which one?
The primary result that came out of these spectral observations over a broad range of frequencies. Primary scientific result.
Yes, I'm interested in the mostly for the emission mechanism, and try to collect many burst data at many frequencies, single frequencies,
right,
to construct a dynamic spectrum using single frequencies.
Right.
And want to know the time variation of the spectrum at wide frequency range.
Right. And what were the principal results that came from that?
At the early stage of that period, I don't think that the important result doesn't come out. Just to see some broad features of the dynamic spectrum. Mm-hmm. That was all.
Later, do you think that it was more fruitful?
Yes.
And what were the main results later, would you say?
Yes. One was it that the I found that the spectrum in the emission at micro range,
yes,
is quite different from that of the meter wave range.
Right.
And at the early time, we don't know the difference between the micro range and meter wave range. It was so that it is just extension of
right.
broadband spectrum. But we found that it is quite different. It has different source of emission, and also the emission mechanism is different from another.
So you mean if you looked at a dynamic spectrum, you could see a discontinuity.
That's right.
Between the meter
yes.
wavelength
yes.
and the microwaves.
Yes. You can get the gap between the two phenomena.
Right. And how did you interpret this?
Well, that appears later, but
well, you talked about Group A and Group B bursts and so forth.
Oh, yes.
In 1961, with K or Chi.
Yeah, yeah. That is the final result of such kind of research.
Right. And but can you explain to me what your main idea was?
So at the early phase of the flare, some different loops, different heights.
Loops at different heights. Yeah.
Will be filled with energetic electrons.
Yes.
And the lowest loop will emit the burst at microwave range.
Yes.
And another loop emit meter wave burst.
Right. And there's sort of a gap in the middle, so you don't see that intermediate frequencies, I see. But is the mechanism the same?
No.
No.
And the in the microwave range, emission is due to the gyrus synchrotron emission. And in the emitter wave range, some part is also gyrus synchrotron emission. But we have another kind of emission, for example, the type 2 or type 3, and also later type 4 or type 5.
Yeah, so you're saying that in the meter wavelength range, sometimes it was synchrotron, but it also could be these other types.
That's
which
right.
were...
Yeah.
Did you say, what mechanism did you think they were at that time? In 1961. From the abstracts, I got the idea that that maybe you were thinking of plasma oscillations.
Yes.
As a possibility, is that correct?
That's it.
But were you confident about? About these mechanisms? I mean, did they really fit the data well?
Well, one component is not yet well understood. I mean that in the meter wave range, we have continuum type emission, and the at the beginning of the Fourier, we call it as Fourier continuum.
Flare continuum, did
yeah.
you say? Yes.
And the later on it goes into the moving type 4, that is the gyrus synchrotron emission, moving source, and later on it merges into the type 1 continuum.
Now, are you talking about our present understanding
yeah.
today?
Yeah.
Right. But I want to know what you were thinking about then, in
1961. Well, in that let's see. Yeah.
I'm just wondering if you had good confidence in these mechanisms.
In that case, I divided into three groups in the frequency range. One is microwave, and another is type 4 in decimeter range.
Right.
And another is type 4 in meter range. And all could be gyrus synchrotron emission from different loops. But I'm not quite sure about the type 4 in decimeter range, because the it has very spiky structure, and also that it has very sharp directivity.
Oh, yes.
And also the polarization is not same as another component. So I thought it could be another kind.
I see.
Due to the plasma wave also.
Well, speaking of plasma waves, it looks like you did some laboratory experiments,
yeah.
Also on arc discharges,
yes.
and so forth. Did that give any insight into the nature of?
I tried to find some connection between the laboratory plasma and the solar plasma, but without much success.
Another thing that it seemed like you were doing was you were concerned about the the noise statistics of the variations
and
trying to explain the overall result as being the summation of many
spikes.
Spikes. Can you tell me what the evidence was for that?
let's see. Type one noise storm. Very spiky structure. And
so you're saying the type 1 noise storms are, are very spiky.
Yeah, but their background, continued parts, superimpose on the
yes.
spikes. So I'm interested in the relation between the background, continued parts, and the spikes. And I try to interpret those components by one family of phenomena.
Right.
That if we superpose spikes having DC component for the such kind of waveform has DC component.
Right.
So if we superpose many spikes, it gives some DC level and fluctuation model.
Now, was there any evidence for this kind of phenomenon on the sun besides the type 1 noise storms themselves? And I'm not a solar radio astronomer. I'd be interested to know, do we still, is this kind of phenomenon, do we think is still, is going on in the sun, these kind of spikes, or?
Yes, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, you went to the Paris Symposium.
Yes.
In 1958. I'd be interested in any remembrances you have of that meeting, and whether or not it affected your research when you went back home.
It was the not the first, but let's see. Anyway, the Japan is a very isolated country, so we have very few opportunity to contact with other researchers. So it was very good chance to acquainted with another scientist in the world. That is the most important.
Right, right.
Personal contact.
Right. Did it change anything that you did when you went back? What you learned there?
No, I don't think so.
Also, about this same time, well, in fact, at the Paris Symposium, you talked about synchrotron radiation. Now, what was it about synchrotron radiation that that made you enthusiastic about it as a mechanism?
Oh, I see. Well, at that time, there was no interpretation about the microwave burst.
Excuse me.
And I wanted to interpret it by gyrosynchrotron.
Mm-hmm.
And it's success.
Were you influenced by especially the Soviet usage of synchrotron radiation for radio sources and the galactic background? Did that influence you?
Yes, yes. And also the...
you say it did influence you.
That's right.
And also what...
And also the... free, yeah. Outburst at meta wave range was thought that it is due to the synchrotron emission.
The outburst, so you mean the very strong
one? The strong one, yeah.
Right.
It was, let's see. Also presented at the Paris Symposium, I suppose. I'm not quite sure.
But you mean by you or by someone else?
No,
by someone else.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I can check.
Yeah.
Maybe check.
At the USI meeting at Boulder.
I see, in 57, that was the year before.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Much higher energy.
Right. Now, as we go through this period of, in the 1950s, you're still all this time at Osaka University?
No, I joined the Tokyo Astronomy Observatory at, let's see, 1954.
I see, in 54, you went where now?
Tokyo Astronomical.
To Tokyo,
yeah,
I see.
Astronomical Observatory.
And you stayed there for the rest
yes,
of the period?
Yes.
And did observations continue at Osaka University,
no,
or did they stopped at that time?
Yeah.
And so, it looks like you were primarily working with. You have many publications by yourself, but there are a couple with Baba.
Uh-huh.
And it's getting into 61 with Nagasawa and Tanaka.
Uh-huh.
But actually, most of your publications are by yourself. Do you like to work by yourself?
Well, maybe, yeah. I am mainly interested in the theoretical part, so it is easier for
by yourself, yeah, right, that's true. So your interest changed from the electronics to the theoretical side,
yeah,
as time went on, right? And who was building these various antennas that were being used during this period?
The Tokyo Astronomical Observatory. One engineer who is Suzuki.
Suzuki?
Yeah.
Oh yes, he's in Australia.
Australia.
Yes, I've met him.
He was
the primary
engineer.
For receivers also, or just, and antennas, both?
Antenna was built by the company.
I see, they were just bought. because they were not very large, I guess.
No. One was 10 meters.
10 meters was the largest?
No. And another is interferometer. At 200 megahertz.
Well, I might ask you more generally, as you look over your work and the other Japanese solar astronomy, radio astronomy in the 1950s, what do you think was the main contribution?
He answered that he thought it was the usage of microwaves and the looking at polarization of bursts in particular. And that's the end of a not too useful interview on 17 August 1981. And this is the end of the tape also.
What's up, Elroy?
What's up, Elroy?
Phil.